So this is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and this is the third Thursday of March for our World Peace Diet Circle, third Thursday gathering. And I want to just thank you all for joining us. We've got a lot to talk about here today, plus whatever's on your mind. So we're in Tucson, Arizona, and as we just found out, we're at the home of Bob Stagnino and his partner Lana, and they're longtime vegan activists that we've known for years, and health freedom advocates also. So it's great to be here, and we have plenty to focus on. But let's go ahead, I think, while we're, now maybe let a couple more people, we just finished kind of a whirlwind. We were in Florida a week ago, and we did an event there. And then in 7 days, we drove across the country to Arizona, and we did 7 events along the way while we were doing that, too. So it was a very productive, and it was a lot of fun. It was busy, but we met some fantastic people, and we were able to do a concert in Austin and quite a few events promoting veganism and some on developing intuition. So thank you to everyone who helped make that possible. And it's good to see you all here, who's here. And what I'd like to do is, oh, yeah, good idea. Let me move that a little closer. April has her hand up. So yes, go ahead, April. Good to see you.
Hi, Will. Did we miss you in Phoenix?
No, we haven't.
Did you go to Phoenix?
We're going to be going to Phoenix a week from today, Thursday.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Okay.
We'll be speaking at that great organic vegan restaurant, David Warr. What's it called? I'll think of the name of it. But he owns
Giving Tree.
Pardon me? Yeah, the Giving Tree. Yeah, he owns the one in Sedona also. Chocolatry. Chocolatry, yeah.
It is Chocolatry. Okay, so next Thursday?
So Thursday at 6 p.m., like right about now, exactly. Right.
We'll see you there.
Good. That's wonderful news. Thanks. Yeah, good. So, yeah, we really appreciate the work that people are doing in Phoenix and here in Tucson. We can talk about that a little later. We do have, as you were just talking about, the Christspiracy screening it's in 600 theaters, mostly in the United States, but also, I think also in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, Germany, and Austria. And it was in the evening of the 20th, which was Wednesday, yesterday night, and then Sunday the 24th, which is Palm Sunday, coming up in a few days. So those are the 2 dates that it's screening. And then hopefully if there's a good response, it'll keep on screening at theaters, and it'll just keep going. And then, of course, eventually it'll be released online as well. But this is a first for a vegan. There's never been a vegan film that has gone this big to go in mainstream theaters that many. So this is a first, and it's a new platform that Kip and Cam are working on creating to help independent filmmakers get their films out to people without going through Netflix, because Netflix wanted them to change the film. They didn't want them to do it the way they were doing it, so they had to find another way to get out to people. So it's been delayed by about 4 years because of that. But I think it's worth the wait, from what I've heard. I haven't seen the final cut, but I've heard it's really good. All right, well, much love to you. Let's go ahead and get started. There'll be some more people maybe joining us as we go along, but we like to start, just take a short few minutes here in the beginning for a meditation. So let's do that together, and then we'll dive right in to the issues that we are facing. We can begin with a meditation. And next month, on the third Thursday in April, we'll be back home at our Karuna Food Forest, and I can play the piano again. Although the first Thursday for the meditation in April will be in LA. So, but the third Thursday will be home. So that's good news. So let's be, you can imagine a little piano music here in the background. I'm playing a little bit. And we'll begin our meditation.
Truly.
So let's just take a moment now and turn our attention within. Give thanks for this, again, this wonderful, precious opportunity that we have to gather together in consciousness and to connect more deeply with the arising of freedom and harmony and health and sustainability in the consciousness of humanity, the consciousness of abundance and unity, and understanding that there's one life that is eternal and that is living through all of us, and that we're all related, not only all human beings, but all living beings. So we just take a moment and drop into this sense of inner peace and ease and harmony that is our true nature, that we dwell always, no matter what the outer appearances may be, we dwell always in a sense of harmony and a sense of joy and a sense of savoring the beauty of the creation all around us, whatever, wherever we are, in whatever dimension we may be. We give thanks for the animals of this earth, beings we refer to as animals, our relations, especially those who are being abused for food and clothing and research and entertainment and for any uses at all. We send them our apologies and we send them our commitment to rescue them from their situation, to bring healing to the situation. And we send our love also to all the free living animals, all the joy and abundance and celebratory quality that they bring to our beautiful earth, that they are manifestations of the infinite creative power, just as we are. And we honor and respect and love them, all living beings. And we hold the vision of the liberation of all animals, leading to the liberation of us as human beings as well. Knowing that we are always connected to the infinite web of relations that connects us all. So breathing together, relaxing into this moment, and let's just join together now in consciousness and send forth from our hearts the yearning that all beings be free, that all beings be well, that all beings be at peace, that all beings be happy, and give thanks especially to all of our brothers and sisters of the past, present, and future who are working for the liberation of animals and humans and for the spiritual awakening that is the foundation of true freedom. And so finally, let's connect with our true home, which has four aspects: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and peace. So breathing together, let's inhale and engender in our hearts the feeling of love and benevolence and goodwill. And with every exhalation, just breathing love and kindness into the whole web of relations. May all beings know that they are loved. May we all equally love all beings. This is one of the foundational spiritual teachings that we yearn, that we learn to have a feeling of love and kindness for all human beings and all living beings, even those who are difficult for us, that we send an impartial sense of kindness and love to all living beings, regardless of their outer manifestation or behavior, We look beyond the outer form to the being, and we send our love to that being. People are wounded and maybe do hurtful things, but we look beyond the outer form of the wounded being and see the light that shines always at the very core of their being, and we send love to those beings, to all beings, those who are close to us and those who are difficult for us. We equally send love to all. And we also now send compassion to all beings. So just with every inhalation, engendering a feeling of compassion, of empathy, of yearning that others be free from suffering. Radiate that into the infinite web of relations. May all beings be free from suffering. And may we do our best to work and to act and to speak and to contemplate in ways that help to relieve others of suffering, breathing and radiating compassion in all directions. Now connecting with the joy that is our true nature, the bubbling spring of joy that's always the core of our being. And every inhalation, just inhaling and savoring and experiencing and celebrating the joy that is our true nature, this wonderful joy that doesn't need any reason, any rational excuse at all. Just joy is our true nature, because we are one with the infinite creative eternal power that is one with all life and the beauty that surrounds us and is within us. So with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to overflow from our hearts and just radiate it out to all living beings. May all beings be filled with the joy of their true nature. We just radiate joy in all directions. And finally, we connect with the inner peace and sense of harmony and ease and equanimity that is our true nature, where we are free from all craving, all anger and resistance, where we see beyond the delusions of separateness to the truth of the interconnectedness of all life. So in the sense of peace, we abide, we inhale this sense of peace, and then with every exhalation, we radiate peace into the infinite web of relations for all living beings. May all beings arise in their awareness to the peace that is always abiding. And so it is. So we just abide in the four viharas, the four aspects of our true nature: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and peace. This breathing and radiating love to all beings, compassion to all beings, joy to all beings, and peace to all beings. And we give thanks knowing that we are all established in our true home eternally of love, compassion, joy, and peace. And out of this awareness, we can move, we can act, we can function, we can do our best to be the positive change that we would like to see in the world, to embody it, and to understand that we are always embodiments of this eternal love, compassion, joy, and peace, that our life is possible because of that, no matter what the outer appearances may be. We give thanks for each other, for our loved ones, and we give thanks knowing that we are part of this beautiful awakening of humanity, of the human consciousness, during these amazing times in which we are incarnating on this earth. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. All right. So, bless you all. Thanks again for joining us on this beautiful day here. We were in Tucson. We had a gorgeous sunny day. And, it was sunny. It was, we stayed at the Unity Church here last night. We parked in our little van. It's not really an RV. And, we got up and we went over to Sabino Canyon, which is our favorite place in this area. And the stream, Sabino Creek, was running beautifully. And so we went there and we swam and we sunbathed and we swam some more and took some walks in nature. And then, of course, did the work that we need to do on the computer, connecting up. And so it's been a great and kind of ending of our 5-month tour. We still have a few more events left. We'll be doing two events here in right in Tucson, and one on Saturday and one on Monday night. We'll be going to the screening of Christspiracy on Sunday, and hopefully some others will join us for that, and having a discussion of that on Monday. And then going up on Thursday to Phoenix, Friday to Ajo, which is in between Phoenix and San Diego. Saturday, Gino will be in San Diego, so looking forward to seeing you then, yeah. And then Sunday will be in Tustin, which is in Orange County. That's Easter Sunday. And then we'll be going up to L.A., Chatsworth, on Wednesday. And then Thursday, we'll be doing our first Thursday call. And Friday will be in Fresno, Saturday in Modesto, doing lectures promoting vegan living, and then Sunday is the last day. We're doing a couple of events in Citrus Heights, just outside Sacramento, and then we'll be home on Sunday the 7th, back at our Karuna Food Forest, and it'll be a little over five months. So it's been an amazing time. I'm really glad that we were able to still do this. I'm not sure how much longer it's going to last, but we just, every day, you know, you wake up and you don't know if it's going to be the last day or not. Actually, we never know for sure. So we can always give thanks, for another day and for another tour and for, until we go on to the next experience. So let's see. Gino, yes, go ahead, please, and unmute. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, thanks, Will. Just for clarification, your San Diego visit will be a week from this Saturday, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And do you have a venue to go to?
Yeah, it's the same one.
The village.
Yep.
Excellent.
The Village.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Village at 5:00, just like last time. 5:00, I think it is, or no, 4:00. 4:00. If you go to our website, I should have mentioned that. If you just go to worldpeacediet.com, click on upcoming events, everything is there. And we update that all the time. If there's little adjustments or changes or whatever, I always do it there. So you can always check worldpeacediet.com and click on the upcoming events. But yeah, we'll be there at 4:00 doing a talk on veganism and freedom. I mean, they go together.
Okay.
Sovereignty.
That's great, Will. And I am also friends with Kimmy Lyon and Michael Blow, who I know
Yes. You
also know.
Yes.
And I'm going to... They're very busy people with their work. I'm going to let them know, and hopefully they'll come with me to see you. I just wanted to make you aware a little bit of the village. If you already know this, you can just stop me. But just at the beginning of what I want to tell you, it was during the pandemic that they refused to follow the rules at that time. And they had the restaurant open. You didn't have to wear a mask. They would have speeches and rallies outside of the restaurant.
Yeah.
All these great speakers and everything. And what happened was people started labeling them as a dangerous place to go, and they weren't following the rules, and vegans especially, and it just mystified me. So anyway, more time has passed, and I still think some vegans are holding a grudge. And also, she needed to raise a lot of money to remain open. Did she tell you this?
Okay, no, go ahead and tell me. I heard her being interviewed by somebody, at one point where she was saying that they needed to raise money, but you probably know more than I do, so it'd be good to know, maybe. Yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a high level, I know. I know she needed to raise $90,000 months ago. A lot of money. And a lot of it had to do with something the city was insisting they do with their facility, and I don't know what that was. So she had, you know, fundraisers and things at her restaurant with music, et cetera. And I think she got to $65,000 and time was running out. And so this one guy came to her and said he would give her the rest of the money if she made part of the menu non-vegan.
Wow.
Right? Guess what she said? No.
Wow.
Yeah. And then another person came to her and said, well, I'll give you the rest of the money if you make this an all-night bar.
Oh.
And again, she said no because she doesn't believe in alcohol and she thinks it's really bad for you, and that's not the energy she wanted for her place. And so finally, the universe provided, and this guy came to her and said, I will donate the rest of the money. Your restaurant's going to remain open.
Really?
And this woman, it deserves it so much. I mean, her history involves homelessness and everything. Her boyfriend lives in L.A. He's called Johnny Juicer. I don't know if you've met him yet, but he's also a great guy. They're a great couple. So I just thought you should know all that going in, and I don't know all the details. So if I said anything wrong, but I think I'm close.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate you sharing the good news, because what I heard was a long time ago. It was like months ago, and she was just talking about how kind of desperate the financial situation was. Mm-hmm. And I was glad that she's still open. And, you know, her name is Alondra Ruiz. And she's just a delightful person.
Yes.
From the last time we got to know her, and her boyfriend, Johnny, he's got thousands and thousands of followers, I think, on Instagram because of his dog, I believe.
Yes.
And great guy. I mean, these are the great vegan champions, I feel. Their hearts are right in the right place, and they're just going out there to spread the message of compassion and kindness and health and freedom, and bless them. Really, just bless them. And I'm so glad that she had the strength not to fall for that kind of stuff, because you know, the vegan movement has been targeted with those kinds of things a lot. And
yeah,
a lot of the large organizations, like Mercy for Animals is a good example, and Humane Society is another good example, that just caved in and took the money and then, you know, de-veganized their whole message, basically. They just said, all right, you know, everybody should buy cage-free eggs, for example. Each one of them got $1 million to promote cage-free eggs. Before that, they were promoting veganism. Now they're promoting eggs. I mean, you know, because money, you know, money talks. And this has been happening all over the place.
Yeah. Well, it's terrible. Yeah. Here in San Diego, we, as you know, we have been working on banning rodeos. And one of the places we protested was outside the Humane Society here in San Diego.
Huh.
While we were there, of course, their history is that particular chapter. They released a lot of cats into just outside. This was several years ago, and they got in trouble for this. Well, they're still doing it, right? And when we got there, there was this woman who was not part of our entourage, who was, she had bought her own cat food, and she was feeding cats outside of the Humane Society that were released, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she uses her own money and everything else. So yeah, they're pretty nefarious too. They're not all that they say they are. And in my experience, these large corporate type of animal liberation places are not all that. So.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a huge problem. Yeah, you're right. It divides the movement quite a bit. You know, and people think that these large animal pro-animal groups really care about vegan living and not eating and not harming animals, and yet they find that very often they're promoting things that are not in the best interest of animals or human beings. And so it's important, I think, for us to just keep going forward. And, you know, we don't have to some people have the job, I guess, of exposing them. There are some vegans that do expose that, which I think is good. Mm-hmm. But it's a real problem. It's not just from the vegan movement. It's been every, you know, the environmental movement, the women's movement, the workers movement. I mean, all the movements, they all get infiltrated.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's about controlling not only the narrative, but about controlling the people that are the so-called opponents to the globalist agenda. They got to control everything. And so we have to be savvy. So I appreciate your sensitivity to those things.
Yeah, thank you. Well, one last point, because it's applicable to what I just said about the Humane Society. We have an animal rights lawyer that's working with us with the rodeo and everything, and he brought up a case in hope of having an official case in the courts about the Humane Society, and that was last Friday, but most of us were not there. It's not officially going to go into the court system yet. We'll hear about this soon enough, I'm sure, but, you know, we're working on it.
Great. Wow. Well, good. So you're taking the rodeo to court? Is that what it is? Or are you taking?
No, we already did that and we lost, and they did have the rodeo in January. But we have one person on city council that's working with us to ban rodeos in the future from San Diego forever. And so we have, we've been going to the city council giving speeches and so forth. And we're pretty much coming to the climax of this to see what happens in a vote with the city council. But, you know, in spite of all our efforts, suddenly the rodeo organization, the Padres organization, I believe, came in and met with the city council, just them. I don't know how they got that platform, and then gave them all the good stuff about rodeos and everything. In advance, we sent the city council a document anticipating all the things they were going to say so they would have that information.
Wow.
So I don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen now.
Well, it's a classic. There's a lot of pushback, obviously, to people, you know, Well, thanks. I mean,
You're welcome.
We see, you know, we were just in Houston. I mean, the rodeo there is massive. They have these gigantic billboards everywhere, and you know, it's Texas, so it's a torturing of the animals. It's really unnecessary and for entertainment. But good. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks, Bob. Gino, we really appreciate your work on that. And does anyone else have anything you wanted to address before we go any farther? Because this is the opportunity. I know I did get an email from April, and I remembered it, and she was asking something, and I thought I'd go ahead and talk a little bit about her question. It's kind of a something that I've seen, and I'm not really sure what's going on behind the scenes, but basically she was asking about the movement by governments, primarily in Europe, and I think more and more in Canada and the United States as well, and probably Australia, New Zealand, you know, these Western governments, to basically make it impossible for farmers to make a living, you know, to kind of take away their land or to take away their ability to use fertilizer, and huge protests that are happening in Germany and France and Poland, Netherlands, quite a few places. And like, what's going on with all that? And I was glad to see, actually, today I got an email. I didn't read the whole article, but I got an email from this group that I really like. It's the Vegan Organic Network. So these are people who really focus on veganic gardening. And as you know, Madeline and I love veganic gardening. We have a veganic food forest. So this is an organization based in England. So their whole thing in this email today was vegans for farmers. That was it, you know, vegans for farmers. And saying that as vegans, we should support the farmers. You know, we should support them because they're really suffering under these draconian rules that are being rolled out, raising the prices for them for petroleum and for things that they need. And so we, you know, as vegans, we've had a lot of conflict, I would say, with, you know, especially with farmers for animal-based foods, like wheat and corn and soy farmers that are very often growing feedstock for animals. And a lot of people think, well, that's good if they go out of business, then there's no more meat, and there's no, it's harder. But I think we have to be careful, you know, because what these governments are doing, I think, what I hear about it more in Europe, but I think it's also happening here. It's happening here too, is that it's just fanning the flames of hatred for the vegan movement. And because the narrative, it's all based on climate change, right? It's all based on climate change. All climate change. Everything is because of climate change, because of anthropogenic global warming. So that we are, because of our exhaust, we're causing the climate to get heated up. And that's a bad thing. And so we have to now switch to electric cars. We have to switch to electric houses, you know, no more gas stoves, no more gas cars, no more gas heating, no more gas fertilizer or running, you know, farm implements. We try to get to net zero, you know, this whole idea of net zero. Well, you know, I've done some research into that, and I remember back in 2014 or 15, 13, maybe 12, I was pretty much like most of these, I was on board with that. I thought, yeah, we need to really protect the climate, protect the environment, and that includes the climate. But then I started, as you maybe heard my story, so I won't take long, but I started to realize, wait a minute, this is, I shouldn't say a rat, I smelled a scam, I smelled a Bill Gates somewhere in there. And so I realized that this is a whole thing to divide, it's a divide and conquer strategy, and that this drive to take away petroleum is really what you want to do if you want to completely control the population. You take away the ability of people to move at all, to go anywhere. And, you know, that's what we do for, obviously, if you're going to do imprisonment cows or pigs or chickens or any animals, you just take away their ability to move, and they're basically slaves. They're in prison. And so that's, I think, really what's going on. Plus, underlying that, erode the fabric of society so much that a new system can be put into place. You can't put a new system into place unless you destroy the old system. And so I think it's a very conscious effort to destroy the system that's in place. And, of course, for me, you know, as the author of the World Peace Diet, I really feel that we do need to have a whole new system, a whole new food system. Animal agriculture is the foundation of slavery and misery and violence and everything else. But the problem is, if you tell the government, if you have the governments telling everyone that they have to eat lab-grown meat, or this meat that comes from factories and or insects, because that's what they're doing. The governments are not telling everyone, you know, everybody, we should eat organic whole grains, organic vegetables, organic fruits. And they're not saying that at all. And that's very, very, I mean, that gives the game away right there. They never say that. They're telling people to eat, that we're going to be, the new protein is going to be insects, the new protein is going to be lab-grown products, and these frankenfoods that are made with GMOs, so they want to increase the amount of poisons that people are eating. And it's, to me, it's a really very, very skillful, I have to say, way to turn public opinion viciously against vegans. People are, that used to kind of like vegans, more or less. I mean, we were kind of like on the same page because we wanted freedom, we wanted health, we wanted environmental sustainability. We kind of agreed. Everybody agreed. We even like the health freedom people before. It was a pretty good environment. But now it's become really polarized. And I was just, we were just in Houston. I was talking to some people and how when they try to talk about veganism to their friends, they just get sworn at and screamed at, and because vegans are seen now really as the enemy, that we're allied with Bill Gates, with the globalists, with Klaus Schwab, with the United Nations, the global warming scam, and with imprisoning human beings, taking away our food, turning the whole planet into a slave state. That's what the vegans are all about. That's what's coming out. That's the narrative that's getting played out everywhere. And unfortunately, what I've seen is the vegan movement is not really pushing back on that. My new book does, and it'll be coming out hopefully within the next couple of weeks. I'm sorry it's been so delayed with the book design, the book cover design and everything. It's just, we've had to switch between different people, but it's been finished for a few months here. But anyway, that'll help, and I'm going to be promoting that very soon. But, and then that'll hopefully open up the conversation. But the whole idea is, I guess, like underlying everything, is to just try to not be gullible and see, just believe what the New York Times and CNN and the United Nations and Google and all these gigantic, powerful media and governmental forces are saying, and look to see what's really going on. So I think this attack on the food system, on the ability to produce food, even though a lot of it I don't think is food. I mean, meat is not food, and cotton, you know, high fructose corn syrup is not food. But so we'll have to see how this plays out. But in the minds of the people, it's an attack on their food, and they're just investing billions and billions of dollars into, like Jeff Bezos, I think, just put in over something billions of dollars into this gigantic new insect protein plant, and so this is definitely coming. More and more, the eating of insects. They're even talking quite a bit about the eating of human beings. You know, like when people die, then it's kind of a waste to just cremate them or bury them. We should eat them. We should eat people. You know, they're really talking about it. I mean, this is coming out in the New York Times and all these places. So, but it's more, I think, the insects and the lab-grown meat. And yeah, and Bezos is also, and these other, and Gates, they've invested a lot in lab-grown meat. So which I think is just an abomination. It's crazy. I mean, it's terrible. We have what we need already. I mean, we can make tofu and tempeh. We can eat lentils and beans and rice and thrive and be healthy like millions of vegans are doing already. And this idea, and vegans are on board with it. I see this a lot, like the farm animal rights movement, and most of these Mercy for Animals are all jumping up and down and cheering for lab-grown meat, that this is the way we can get everybody to go. And I think it's a terrible misunderstanding of what's really happening. And it's just the idea is to poison the population. So, and that's a good way to poison people. Those foods are toxic. And they're also... more and more regulations against local farmers, small-time local farmers. I was just reading that Oregon has just recently passed a law to make it harder for small farmers to get water for their land. So the idea is to just not allow people to grow their own food and to so it's about centralization. We know that. The whole thing is about centralization of power and control. And so what veganism is, I think, at its core, is about decentralization. It's about empowering individuals for sovereignty, for ourselves, for the environment, to be healthy, to create local communities that are healthy, to create local communities that support local farmers markets. You know, this is really, to me, what veganism is all about. It always has been. It's an alliance with the environmental movement and with all the movements for justice and freedom. And so the whole idea is to co-opt those and focus on centralizing power. And that's really the issue. So I hope that's helpful, April. April, does that clarify things for you a little bit? There's probably more to this, and I'm going to do some more research into it. But that's what I see. And the other thing I see, of course, is that these farmers have been fantastic. I mean, they've been really pushing back. They've been blocking traffic in Germany and the Netherlands and I think in Poland now and France, and really forcing the government not to do this. And I think that's a key thing, is that we are really called, all of us, to support the farmers. I think we should support them. And we should promote the vegan message in a loving way. It's a great way to live, but not with this idea that we're going to attack them, because I like what Rowdy Girl Sanctuary is doing. We just did a workshop there, and she's just outside Austin. I'm trying to help the farmers transition over to growing mushrooms or to growing other crops, and so not just put them out of business. There's other things they can grow. We still need to eat. So a lot of it's how we do this, and to understand that big pharma, I think, in many ways, is behind a lot of this, and big pharma thrives on poisoning people and having sick people, and it's a tool, I think, of the super wealthy elites that are from my point of view, they thrive on a population of human beings that is unhealthy and is smaller. They want fewer people, a lot fewer people, and they want a lot more chronic disease. When people have chronic disease, then they're just trying to survive. They're not going to protest. They're not going to question. They're just going to go along with whatever the government says. So we need to really be healthy. We need to question the whole germ theory. I think the germ theory is one of the worst enemies that we have, because that whole idea that we're surrounded by these malevolent things that are trying to get us. I mean, that's how that fear, and then they can unleash massive amounts of poisons into the environment and into our bodies to fight against these nasty germs, the viruses and bacteria and all that. And we go, okay, yeah, do it. Yeah, poison me some more, poison me some more. And we don't realize that whole narrative is just part of the animal agriculture narrative. So we really need to get back to the alternative to the germ theory, which is the terrain theory, that our health is based on the quality of our consciousness, the quality of our food and our whole, the way we live. And that's much more obviously in alignment with the ancient wisdom teachings. This whole thing has been pushed for a long time. All right, so I wanted to share that basic input. Does anyone have any comments or questions about anything that I've been saying? Because I think it's a good opportunity to go deeper with what's really happening in the world. And that's one of the things I like to do with our Third Thursday. So does anyone have anything you'd like to share? Any comments or questions or anything more about all this? Andy, yeah, go ahead. And you can turn your video camera. I mean, I had to turn it off there for a while, but let's see. So unmute, Andy. Can you unmute? I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, there she goes. All right.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you.
Now it's working. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's some dogs in the background too. Yeah, so first, thank you so much for everything. And I appreciated Gino's update on the village. I'm very glad to hear that. I just wanted to bring up one thing also, and some people are hopeful. Like, I was listening a little bit to Dawn Lester and David Parker, and they seem hopeful, and I don't know where you're at with it. I look out in the world, and I don't know how they see hope, but because I'm literally out every single day driving around, and I see these huge residential complexes going up, and the land is being stolen from the coyotes, so the coyotes are getting in people's yards and killing their pets and things like that, all kinds of things. So people are very, very aware of what's happening in their neighborhoods now. They don't know what's going on, but they see changes and they don't like it. And one frustrating thing, I'm very lucky with my Medicare. I have all these free gym memberships. But sadly, what I've seen since 2020 is either some of them have closed for good, to never reopen, and ones that were 24 hours and all of them pretty much cut back their hours. And now the only two 24-hour fitness gyms that were actually 24 hours, they just sent out an email that those will no longer be 24 hours, and all these times are very restricted. So there's only like Anytime Fitness, a little bit of other places that are 24 hours. And the reason I bring this up that it's so important is people that have already, I mean, I do the vehicle life because I couldn't stand the lack of freedom in the rental industry anymore. They've already been corporatized very slowly, little by little, they've been taken over. And now, you know, it's been happening to people that are doing the vehicle life. And I don't know if you've experienced, because when you guys travel, you probably have a place to park and, you know, whatever you need. But for people that do the vehicle life, we need a safe place to park 24/7. And the gyms used to be it. And the Walmart used to be it. And from what I've heard from one Walmart that used to be a 24/7, they said there's no more 24/7 Walmarts anywhere. So what this is cutting out options for people who are already living, you know, a much, you know, less expensive lifestyle that would be as affordable as possible. And suddenly, you know, they're stealing their rights to park anywhere, you know. So anyway, this is where I see so many things happening right in front of my face. And because I do the vehicle life, you know, I'm aware of it, I think, a lot more. But so do you feel hopeful or not? Or I mean, because I'm more terrified because of the people that I see going along with everything rather than the government. It's the people that just comply that honestly scare the crap out of me. But anyway, so where are you at with this?
Thanks, Andy. Well, you know, I mean, I think underlying everything, the most important thing is to just do the best we can not to be afraid. Fear is one of the one thing that they have that they can, that's contagious, you know, and it kind of spreads, and it makes it a lot easier, I think, for the globalists to manipulate us. So, but I know you're a very courageous person, and you're looking carefully and looking deeply and asking the right questions and researching, which is really important. I think it's important to keep the big picture. I'm not sure, you know, how it's all going to turn out. Like the movie has many different chapters in it, I think, and we're in a chapter right now where, you know, we have 10,000 years of animal agriculture kind of coming to a head in a way. I mean, we've got this massive technology and science that has been used and developed to enslave animals and to give us power over nature and over the sacred feminine. And it's being now mobilized against humanity and to enslave us in many ways. And so that's something that's, I think, you know, remember who we are. We have to remember that we're infinite and eternal beings, and we're functioning through a physical body for a few decades here on this planet, and we're here for a purpose. We're here to be part of the solution to these problems and to shine our light in our own unique way, and no one can tell anyone else how to do that, right? Each one of us has to, you know, we're all called to figure that out ourselves and just give thanks for the way everybody does it. Some people come to the party a little late. It takes them longer to undo the programming than others. And it's hard to change. It's hard to argue your way into getting people to change. A lot of times we can be an example and we can speak our truth. And when people are ready, they'll change. We've known that already, like with veganism. It's hard to argue somebody into going vegan. But we can plant seeds and we can be an example. And we can create contexts like vegan restaurants and veg fests and other things that'll help. And I think it's the same thing with this. So I'm positive, and it's just in the sense that in many ways I think this rapidly accelerating tempo of domination in many ways is perhaps indicative of the level of desperation that the globalists have. They're trying to move fast before people wake up enough, because I think COVID really did awaken a lot of people to the dark side of the medical establishment, the dark side of vaccines. And it really, I think, made people realize, because even though a lot of people did get vaccinated, when they started trying to roll out the boosters, nobody, it's only like 2 or 3% of the people, they just said, no, we're not, we're done with that. So I think there is definitely a battle going on for the consciousness of humanity. And the whole idea is that we have to do our best to be a positive force and call these things out. Try to do what we can to create positive situations. So, if, like for the vehicle life, I hear what you're saying. I think I see it happening. I mean, everything they're doing. You know, like one thing that's so interesting, like the little van we have, this microvan. There was only 3 companies making them. And to me, these microvans are fantastic because you can park anywhere and no one knows, because they're so small, you know, no one knows you're in it, right? So every night, yeah. Like the last whole week, we've been staying in Best Western or Holiday Inn or one of these, hotel parking lots. We just pull in next to everybody else. There's usually plenty of room in the parking lot. And we just pull the blinds and lock the doors and we sleep and we're great. And we go on in the morning and we never, ever, ever have any problem. But if we were a bigger van, it would be more obvious. Like, oh, who's that? Maybe they're staying. Or if we were like one of those Volkswagen buses or Vanagons, you know, they're kind of obvious. And they always, yeah. They always get knocked on the window. Who's in there, you know? But the little tiny ones like we have, this looks like a regular little car. But the interesting thing is, like, the one we have is made by Ram, by Fiat, actually, in Italy, but it's a Ram, and they're discontinued. They just discontinued it this year. The other main one is the Ford Transit Connect. They just discontinued that this year. And the other main one was the Nissan Envy, and they discontinued that one about 2 years ago. So there's no more. There's no more small vans being made by anyone, except maybe a very, very expensive one by Mercedes. But basically, and that's bigger, but there's no, these little minivans, which I just think is the greatest thing, you have to buy it used. You can't buy a new one. They're done.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, why in the heck would they do that? I mean, this is something that it's a freedom thing. It's a total freedom little thing. And,
yep.
But I'm not surprised. You know, it's kind of like what you're saying. It's like, well, you know, no, we're going to close that door. We're going to close, you're going to keep closing these doors, you know? And, so, and how they make these lights now, I just think it's so funny. I mean, did you notice all the cars? I mean, basically, you can only get one color now, gray. All the cars are gray. And this is kind of military gray. And then if you notice the headlights, you know, the headlights used to be round and kind of friendly. Now all the headlights are these LED lights, and they look,
yeah.
They're evil. You know, when you go outside, all these headlights are like these thin things with this ball and the thing. It's like, it looks like satanic eyes. And,
yeah.
And like every car is like vicious, and it's prowling around, and you're like, we don't like you. I mean, it's like, who's designing this? Who's making all these gray and black, very kind of malevolent looking vehicles that just look like, you know, like you don't want to mess with them, like really dangerous. It's just, again, it's part of, I think, of the divide and conquer mentality. And we should be talking about it. Like, what's going on? What's up with this? And don't support it. Buy a nice, bright yellow, friendly looking car or whatever. Try to do something. Because I think that's it, you know, and they're building these, like you say, I think, these housing units. They don't like the idea of people having their own yards and having their own gardens and so forth and living on a little piece of, having some land. That's, you know, they want, because that's freedom. You can grow your own food, boy, you know, that's a great thing. And I really loved what Robert F. Kennedy said today. He did a tweet. He said, if I become president, I'm going to work that every single person living in the United States has their own home on a piece of land. You know, it's like, that would be great. You know, having land is really, that's the ticket, I think, you know, because when we start living in these places where we're disconnected from the land, that's when you start enslaving people. You take them away from the land. Now you've got them. Now you've got them living in a human, like in a prison. And they just, they go crazy, unfortunately. We gotta get back, we gotta connect with the earth somehow, and, grow our own food. And that's how we can decentralize the power. So that's what's happening. It's like I say in my new book, whatever we sow, we reap. We've been sowing this for 10,000 years in animals. We've been taking away their freedom, taking away their access to the land, taking away their reproductive rights, taking away their children, sexually abusing their children, you know, everything we've been doing by the millions every day is happening. So we've got to go vegan as a society and liberate animals. And stop taking, and you know, and let them live their lives, and then we'll have the foundation and the moral platform for that to happen to us. And that's the big thing I see missing in the freedom movement, is that they still think we want to be free, but we want to be free to enslave animals, which is very short-sighted. So the vegan movement and the health freedom movement are natural allies. They shouldn't be enemies. We should be really acting with each other. But thanks for, you know, so I'm positive, and just in the sense that we just do the best we can as long as we're still breathing. And then we go on to the next experience, you know, I mean, whatever that is, because we're far more than just this human body. They want us to think we're just this human body. And when we think that, then we're, oh no, what's going to happen? But it's really how we live our life that's going to matter. It's not going to matter if we survived or not. Nobody survives. You know, we all leave. We're just here for a few years. So it's how we live our life that really matters.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, that's, I guess, just what I needed to hear. Thank you so much, Will. I'm looking forward to seeing you when you get in San Diego.
Oh, good. Yeah, great. Looking forward to seeing you. Yes, Tammy.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, thank you. It's a great conversation. You know, yesterday I listened to this podcast because it was promoting the Essene Way and the Essene Diet. And I think the podcast was The Way Forward or something like that. And, you know, he was vegan for a while, the man that was speaking. And then he talked about that there was so much evidence that Jesus ate eggs and ate fish and this and that. I thought it was just really synchronistic because I was listening to the podcast yesterday when Christspiracy came to the theaters. And then he talked about how when he went vegan for a year, how his testosterone really plummeted. And I just hear this a lot, like a lot of people, you know, because I studied with Gabriel Cousins and there's so much evidence that the Essenes were absolutely vegan, you know, so much evidence.
Right. Yeah,
and
I agree.
It's so interesting how so many things can be twisted and turned. And he said everything that I studied, except he turned it around so he could eat raw milk and eggs again and fish. And I don't know. I'm not really disheartened by it, but I'm really kind of in this area of really having to maintain so much integrity and love. So that
right.
I get pulled off my center. Like even my partner, like his ex-wife got his teenage son vaccinated. So if anybody and he's got so much anxiety around it. So if anybody brings up that subject, if it just even comes up organically, he gets like almost an anxiety attack. And so it's creating a lot of stress in our relationship. I don't even know, you know, where it's going to end up, because he ends up having all of this. He struggles a little bit with anxiety and depression. I think it's kind of his antidote will be spiritual intelligence, really. But it's kind of like this conquer divide. I had to ask somebody to leave one of our communities. You know, I was in a grandmother's meeting and he comes in and he's going on about his mantra every time he sees me is those self-promoters and anti-vaxxers. Like it's just like as soon as he walks in the meeting and he sees me, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. I've had enough. And I was really grateful because even people in the meeting that chose to be vaccinated were backed me up, like they're, because I feel like I kind of approach things love-based. So it's challenging. You know, I have the conversation with my 5-year-old granddaughter all the time because she's not being raised vegan. So I feel like, and I feel like I'm constantly having to return to love, like just really stay focused in integrity and love so that I don't make the people around me that I love deeply feel bad. It's kind of like what you said. Everybody's going to find their way in their time. But also set boundaries. Like also go, you know, enough. Like enough.
Good.
Enough. You know? So it's a challenge anyways. I just find it's kind of a challenging place to be in the world right now.
Right. Yeah, it's tremendously challenging. I completely agree. And I think the thing is, but that's in a way, it's good, right? Like I said, I think I said this last month, if you go into a gym, you don't want to have weights that are only 1 pound and you try to lift your, it's like, well, that's too easy. So we got really heavy weights right now. we have to really develop our integrity, our awareness, our spirituality, our ability to be aligned. And it's a super challenging situation. And I think, really, like, the problem is, there's that saying. The saying is, I kind of like it in a way. It's a little bit sexist in a way, but the saying is, strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. Hard times create strong men, right? So it's kind of this idea that when a culture evolves, like when it's building, when it's growing, when there's a sense of working together, then people, in many ways, really thrive. They really use their creativity, they connect with each other, they cooperate, they learn. When the culture gets to the point where now it's, and this can be in our own lives also, an individual, but we've kind of made it, then we like, well, now what do? We just kind of sit back and relax, and we just get kind of corrupt, and we get fat and lazy, and we start getting perverted and all this stuff, and then violence comes in, and it just gets terrible. And then it collapses again, and then it gets hard, and then we get strong again because we need to develop our capacities and so forth. So the situation, I think that's really, we see that happening in the whole Western civilization right now. I mean, it's become so rich in a sense, and the wealth and power have gotten so concentrated in just the hands of a few, and they are actually spewing such a massive deception campaign, because we human beings don't tolerate that kind of injustice, right? I mean, when you have people that are barely starving, you can't get enough to eat, and you have other people who have billions and billions of dollars. The only way that can be maintained is through controlling the narrative. You have to have some way to control the narrative in people's minds so that they get up in the morning and don't have a revolution immediately, like stop it. So this massive narrative control requires massive censorship. And I have quite a few articles over the last year in the resources section on what's being referred to as the censorship industrial complex. I mean, there's a massive complex that has been built over the last 15 or 20 years, actually since the Vietnam War, to control public opinion. And the internet just made it even easier. I mean, we thought it was going to make it better. We thought the internet would just democratize information. It's just the opposite. I mean, that's really controllable through search engines. And so it's made people even more, it's made it even more difficult for us to know what the heck that is going on in the world. And so I think, this censorship complex and the deception that's spewing so much. But the neat thing is that we human beings, as spiritual beings, even though we're harmed, we're vaccinated. And I think, if someone called me an anti-vaxxer, I'd say, thank you very much. I'm proud of that. I am totally an anti-vaxxer. I'm anti-violence. I'm anti-rape. I'm anti-killing. I'm anti-stealing. I mean, of course I'm anti-vax. I mean, vaccines do nothing but harm. It's all they do. They harm. They don't do anything but harm. And if you put poison in someone's arm, you're harming them. I mean, that's it. I mean, there's no good side to poisoning and harming people. I mean, it's no good side to eating animal foods. No good side to exploiting and oppressing people and taking away their rights. I mean, that's toxic and harmful. So, gosh, I mean, definitely I'm against that kind of horrible abuse of other beings, the abuse of the weak by the strong, which is really what it is, and deception. And the thing about deception, you've heard me say this, but a new thing just emerged in my consciousness the other day, which I just want to share, because I've been saying that, deception of all the evils in the world, it's the worst, because with deception, you don't know it. you know, if you kill someone, they know they've been killed. If you steal from them, they know they've been stolen from. If you rape them or whatever, they know they've been harmed. But you deceive someone, they don't know. And you can keep doing it. And you can keep stealing and harming them more and more and more. And they still think you're their savior. They think they love you. They think you're great. So the deception thing. So they have these globalists. I mean, if you just read Bernays, you know, this guy Edward Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew, who created the whole public relations movement, and back in the 1920s, you know, he has three books out. And they just, one of them is called Propaganda, one's called I can't remember the names of them, but it's the Manipulation of the Mass Mind. And he makes it very clear that it is basically easy to control people's minds once you understand how they will trust authorities. They'll do whatever the authorities tell them to do. And so we've had the Rockefellers and these globalists hiring these kinds of people for decades, mastering the art of controlling the narrative. In our educational system, our schools are just that. We trust authorities. So on every level, we vaccinate kids, so we shut down their natural radiant health with all these toxins. I mean, massive destruction of children right off the bat. We fluoridate the water, which just calcifies the pineal gland, disconnects us from our spirituality, reduces our intelligence, chemtrails, and all these other massive chemical poisoning of people that reduces our intelligence and our awareness. Then you have people eating meat. I've already talked about that, how that reduces our intelligence because we don't want to make the connections. So all of this is all deception. Everything is deception. We don't need to eat meat to be healthy. We don't need to be vaccinated to be healthy. We don't need to have drugs to be healthy. We keep getting deceived into eating meat, taking drugs, getting vaccinated. And all of that is dumbing us down and reducing our power. And so, but the point is that this deception also does something else, which is that it divides us. Because whenever there's a deception happening, there'll be certain people that'll figure it out. Oh, we're being deceived. There'll be other people who won't figure it out. And so then you're guaranteed that they're going to start fighting. And so the people that are figuring it out, they're saying, wait a minute, everybody, we're getting deceived. Oh, you're crazy. We're not getting deceived. And so a deception campaign not only works to control and dominate people, but it also works to split and divide them. So we who have sort of are figuring this out, that we're being deceived, our challenge is to somehow to help people who are being deceived awaken out of the deception. And it's the same thing with veganism. How do you do that? You know, you can't just do it directly. We have to somehow, I think the main thing that really helps is being an example of someone who is happy and healthy and vegan, someone who is happy and healthy and unvaccinated, someone who is happy and healthy and not going along with the narrative. That, because when people are lost in the narrative, it's very hard to argue with them directly, but just the example of us and continuing to just speak up and manifest it, eventually it does work. I think it is working. And we're in a battle. I mean, we're in a spiritual battle that I think is unparalleled. I mean, it's massive. And you mentioned something about, or maybe it was somebody's mentioned something about the, about, I know, testosterone levels. That opens another whole conversation, which I haven't gotten into much, but I think we really have to look at sexuality. And sexuality is being weaponized. It has been weaponized on a massive scale, and it's very satanic. And women have been turned into sexual objects, and children are being turned into sexual objects. Everything's being sexualized, and that's satanic. I really think we need to, like, evolve. And this is something personal, I mean, for each one of us, but beyond the idea that sex is going to make our life better. Now, we really need to understand that our life gets better when we spiritually evolve. And this whole thing of sexuality is some kind of way of having a great life. I mean, it's not. It's for having kids. That's what what it's for. The breasts are for feeding children. I mean, this whole thing of the sexualization and this massive sexualization through the United Nations and of children and all this, this is really satanic, and it's, I think it's changing everybody. It's getting everybody so confused. We need to like really see that our happiness comes from seeing other beings as beings, not as potential sexual partners who are going to give us what we want sexually. Because as soon as we go down that road, we start wanting something. And it's suffering. It doesn't end well. It's not going to end well. You know, we really need to evolve on that level a lot. And like I said, I haven't talked about this before, but I'm thinking we need to talk about that too and stop identifying ourselves as sexual beings even. We're, you know, that was like the sexual liberation thing. We thought it was so great in the 60s. But there's a huge price when you start looking at yourself as a sexual being, because we're much, 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 much more than that. And that creates a huge perversion, and it pollutes everything, I think, a lot. So I know it's a big one, but I just think we have to really see how that all works, and the way we sexually abuse these billions of animals. I mean, that's boomeranging back all kinds of ways. So we need to purify. We really need to purify our consciousness and the way we look at others, and learn to just go to a higher level. And we're being programmed not to do that. And there's a reason for that. There's a real reason for that. If you want to control people, you focus on sexuality and you focus on violence and fear. Those are the things that create slaves. And so we really are called to, I think, question so much of what we've been told about everything. And the whole, I think that's where the whole woke movement is being used to destroy our society in many ways. We have to get out of that and see that we are spiritual beings, and not go along with these narratives of fear that are being used to take away our power and divide us against each other. So thanks for that great point. Gino, sorry I didn't honor your hand up there earlier, but I just wanted to say that. So go ahead.
Okay, well, excuse me.
Bless you. Bless you again. Oh, you still there? Looks like I think Gino's sneezed and his camera has frozen up. So, all right, well.
Well, while he's waiting to unfreeze, this is Lily.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how to kind of correlate the fact I was a child in the 50s.
Yes.
And there were terrible outbreaks of polio, and we had Jonas Salk, and we are one nation that doesn't have polio, at least, and it's really around the world, and it was a very big problem. Now, I've been a vegan 17 years, and I didn't vaccinate for the coronavirus, but I feel grateful that I, you know, Franklin Roosevelt wound up with polio, and they didn't have a vaccine in those days.
You know,
I'm wondering how we can kind of combine the two. You can't just throw everything out and say that vaccines are totally, you know, across the board. I was vaccinated for smallpox as a child, as a baby, actually. And I'm grateful I didn't get smallpox. So,
you know, okay. I hear, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's a good question. It's a really good question. Like, do vaccines work? The thing is, we've been lied to by the pharmaceutical industry about everything, especially about vaccines. Polio is from poisoning. It's from DDT and other chemical poisons. It's got nothing to do with a virus. And we've been lied to. The vaccines just cause terrible suffering. People still have chemical poisonings that looks just like polio, and they just give it different names now. You know, they call it, they have a variety of different names. I can't remember these long medical names. but they just changed the name, and people still have the same chemical poisoning. There's no benefit to vaccines. It just poisons people. The same thing with smallpox. It's all caused by poisons that were brought out during World War I and in earlier times. So we really need to do some research. I would suggest getting the book, What Really Makes You Ill. It's a great book. It's a big book. It's 700 pages. But if you read that book and other books, there's many books on this, you will see that every single so-called epidemic that we attribute to a virus or even to bacteria were caused by poisonings from chemicals, and they cover it up. And it's been going on for a long time, and the CDC has been completely taken over and captured by the pharmaceutical industry. They will never say that something is caused by Monsanto. They'll say, oh, it's caused by a virus, and then you can vaccinate everybody and make even more money. So this is a huge scam, and I've done literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of research into this. I would never dare to say this if I didn't know what the heck I was talking about, because I've really done a lot of research. I noticed that Bob just put his camera on. You want to say anything, Bob? Because I know you've got hundreds of hours. And Bob is an acupuncturist, and he's a healthcare practitioner. We're staying in Bob's house here. Bob, you want to say a word about that?
You said it all. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well.
It's part of the deception. I mean, it starts in the textbooks. But like you said, they've just changed the names of the diseases and blame them on different things. And like even with people who had, quote, polio, you know, if they just let it run its course naturally, those people would just get well again in most cases. But what happens is they start treating them with all these toxic drugs, and then it becomes permanent injury. So, but even like with polio, the incidence of polio was going down before they even introduced the vaccination programs. And then in some areas where they didn't even have polio, after they introduced the vaccination programs, they started having it. So, I mean, it's, again, it's a lot of deception, and you have to really do your homework and dig deep to find out the truth. But that's what everything Will says. It's right on the money.
Yeah, it's terrible to see, you know, Bill Gates started vaccinating all these people in Africa and India for polio. He paid for it, and literally hundreds of thousands of children died of polio. From the vaccine. I mean, it's from the chemicals. There's no polio. It's a chemical. It's a toxic chemical destruction. Like you put chemicals that are toxic into rats or humans, they die. Some of them die, some of them don't, but a lot of them do. And that's what it is. They're toxic chemicals. If you look at the ingredients in vaccines, there's formaldehyde, EDTA, and aluminum, and there's all these different adjuvants that, in order to mobilize our immune system, and they're toxic. I mean, the whole thing is toxic. We really need to do the research. Even on the CDC website, you can read the ingredients of vaccines. I mean, they're devastatingly toxic. So it's just, you know, I know most of us just don't take the time to dig deep into the research and to find out from non-controlled sources what's really going on, because it's very disturbing, and most people don't want to be disturbed, and most people are too busy, you know. I mean, most people are too busy. I'm very fortunate. I have some free time on my hands, and I can do some reading and really look into this. But and then say what I think. But I really appreciate your question, Lily. I think that's what everybody thinks, you know, that somehow it couldn't just be toxic. It must have some good. It must have some good there. Yeah. Well, you know, I used to think the same thing. It must have some good, and then I realized it has no. It doesn't. It's just it's a combination of placebo, perhaps. People think, oh, but for the most part, they're just harming. I mean, they're harmful. That's my strongly considered opinion. Anyway, Gino, do you have something you wanted to add to that, or something different, or
had your hand up this whole time? We have a couple of activists here, and can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of activists here in San Diego. It's a mother and son team. The mother is 51 and the son is 25, and they do tons of activism in, around the city. And both of them are substitute teachers in elementary school. And so on the sly, more or less, they have been teaching the children about veganism and telling them all about it and what it does to the animals and so forth. And so the mother, her name is Carolina, and she recorded many conversations on her phone with these children. And they were just amazing. And these children were like all into it. They really wanted to know everything. Until today, she played one for me. This was maybe a little older child, maybe 10. And he was speaking the words of his parents. He would have nothing to do with veganism kind of thing. I could tell. But so I introduced Carolina and Jackson to my good friend Dave Giardina in New York, who has attended these meetings before. And he's been an activist and vegan for many, many years. In fact, he even got me into it. And he's also an artist and so forth. And he restarted his show called Celebrating Art. And that's on Manhattan News Network. The link is in the chat in case you're all interested. But next Tuesday at 6:30 Pacific time, he'll be airing the show where he interviews Carolina and Jackson about the stuff with the children. This brought to mind me, there's another activist I'm associated with that is an elementary school teacher, and I says, would you please talk with Carolina about this? And I'm starting to have this grand design of there should be a documentary about this, about the children and teaching the children and fostering a movement on teaching children veganism. Because the old saying goes, children are our future. We don't have a lot of time on this earth, given what's going on all over the place. And when we die or something, our children are going to be around. They're going to take over. They need to be vegan early on in life as possible. And I think that's just so important. One of the most important things we can do as vegans is teach the children and find ways around, you know, the schools and all of this to still teach these children. And I'm so proud of Carolina and her son that they're doing this. That's it.
Great. Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely. We have many people that are working on bringing the vegan message to children. And I was actually on the board of directors of one of the main groups with Lorena Mukke. She's one of our Wokeist Diet facilitators and created, I forget what it's called now. They've got millions of dollars in grant money, train hundreds of facilitators who are in the schools right now. They've gotten, I think they're somewhere around 15 or 20% of all schools. They've given classes promoting veganism in the United States. They've spread to Canada and Australia as well. They had me, I mean, they were, I stopped right at COVID. I was the chair of the board of directors of that for all the way up until COVID. And then somebody else took over after that. And I don't know how they're going with COVID because they shut down schools a lot and things, but they're still going as far as I know. And so there's a number of different people I've worked with over the years too who are working with children. And it's true, you're right. I mean, kids are naturally open to this, to the vegan message. And it's a great thing. You just have to be very, 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 very careful because of the parents that don't like that. And if the parents don't like it, then and children are basically sponges for their parents. I mean, you know, for the people around them, the adults around them. And so bringing the vegan message to children is important, but I always thought, well, if we could get the parents to go vegan, all the kids would naturally automatically be vegan because they'll be like their parents. The thing that's difficult, I think, is that if you have the idea that, well, we know better than the parents, so we're going to try to go around the parents and teach them better than the parents would. The problem with that is, and I used to be more in favor of that than I am now, but I think over the last 4 years, what's happened with COVID, this absolute all-out attack on the family, that we want to have this country run by technocrats who are unelected and get rid of the parents So the parents don't know when their kids are getting sexual education or getting or changing their gender or whatever it is. Well, the parents don't need to know. You know, we don't care about the parents. The kids are basically under the thumb of the government, not of the parents. But that's like on a dairy. You know, I own you. I own your kid. You know, it's not your baby. That's my baby. The government says that, you know, it's not your baby, it's my baby. I own your baby. You don't own your baby. So it's really a direct attack on the family. And as vegans, I think we should not do it. We shouldn't support that, you know, because we need to have, you know, healthy family structures, to have a healthy society. And we should be careful about the vegan message being affiliated with these woke ideas of destroying the family and we'll do it better ourselves, destroying the, you know, marriage as an institution. I mean, a lot of that I think is very dangerous, and it's based on a very perverse, violent, kind of turning us into livestock. So the talk, what we do to animals, how we vaccinate them, how we medicate them, how we abuse them medically, to just exploit them. The same thing's happening to us, and we need to wake up out of it. That's the bottom line, and really see that these governmental agencies and these huge, incredibly powerful pharmaceutical corporations, I mean, the pharmaceutical corporations, money translates directly into power. I mean, it does, you know, and it buys the education and the narrative and everything to such a degree that people don't realize the degree to which they've been completely brainwashed. People just do not know. You can't, there's no way to comprehend it unless you somehow can extricate yourself out of it. But most people don't want to. It's very comfortable to stay in society and believe what everybody believes, and you can kind of go along. But to me, veganism is a huge, big picture. It doesn't just stop with animals. And now, especially, we need to liberate humans from this program that is being built around us. It's called a panopticon. You know, a panopticon is a prison where it only takes one or two people to watch over millions of people. And we've got that now with the internet and Facebook and everything else. So, we can be easily, enslaved. So again, I'm positive. I know it's not going to happen in the long run, but it's going to depend on us having the wisdom to understand this. So I love what you're saying, getting the kids, helping the kids, but also working with the parents, you know, not just forcing our thing onto the kids without caring about the parents. Because I think we need to keep the family structures are so important, and they're being attacked just like the religions are being attacked. So much is being attacked right now. And that's great. Well, Madeline has just come in and showing her bright and shiny face here. I want to thank everyone for joining us. I know this is like to me it's been a great session. I hope it's been for you too. We have these we have these issues, you know, and it's really, I think in many ways they're the toughest things. Because we'd like everything to be clear cut and simple and easy, and we're the good guys, we're the vegans, and they're the bad guys, they're the meat eaters, and but we have to realize that that veganism really calls us to a higher level of awareness about everything. I also want to just give Chrissy a quick second to say something about what you're working on now, because I think it would be really interesting just to hear. And then we'll do our prayer together. So can you just say a word about your project that you're working on?
Sure. Thank you so much. It's great to see everybody. For people who don't know, I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and I had a novel come out in 2022 called Marrying Myself, which featured a vegan protagonist. So it's a fun read, but it has an underlying message about self-love. And so I'm now working on a companion project to that book, which will eventually be a book. But in the meantime, I'm working on a podcast self-love series. And I have a slate of people who I am going to interview on the subject of self-love, which I'm going to make a point of distinguishing from narcissism, because we've got a lot of narcissism in the world. not nearly enough self-love. So I'm going to be doing that as part of my, under the umbrella of my Vegan Posse podcast. So you can check out the Vegan Posse. I'll be keeping people posted through that podcast. I've had a couple of people on the call have actually been guests on the podcast. Tammy, Lisa, Will himself. I've also had a lot of awesome people like Pam Popper, who founded Make Americans Free Again, and Victoria Moran. Recently had Joanne Farb, whom some of you might know. Keep an eye out. I'm going to be getting a website up for the podcast soon. But in the meantime, the self-love project is my focus. So I wish you all lots of self-love and appreciate all the love that I feel coming from you. And great to see everybody. My website is ChristineMelanieBenson.com. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me if you'd like to ask any questions or have any recommendations for the podcast or even stories to share about self-love, because I'm interested in hearing that too. So thank you.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much, Chrissy. And that's another subject that's very important. Self-love as opposed to narcissism, right? And Angel has her hand up. Okay, go ahead, Angel.
Aloha. Thank you to you and Madeline for all the amazing service that you do. It's spectacular. And thank you for being you and for your just consistency and perseverance in sharing this message. It's awe-inspiring. And my question is, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, can hear you, yeah.
My question is, we have a situation here where it's kind of a phenomenon of nature where there's this huge swarm of bees right out of the side of the front door in Maui Meadows. And it was like you couldn't even walk through there, and that's the only door to get out to the street. So I didn't know what to do about this. Luckily, the swarm kind of subsided after a while, but there was still a lot of bee activity. And so I spoke to the landlord about it and this home that I'm renting in Maui Meadows, and he said that if it didn't settle down, that the bees could be relocated, which I thought was a great idea. However, when they assessed the situation, they determined it would require taking down an entire wall and this huge deconstruction because they had embedded these colonies inside the walls, etc. And they said it was not feasible to do that, so that what they were going to do was spray, you know, in effect, kill these bees. So I know bees are living creatures, and I wrote about bees in my book, and I just didn't know how to respond to this. But what they said is there really was no alternative because it was not feasible or cost-effective to take all this, you know, take down a whole side of the wall and all the stuff that would be required to anyone. So my question to you, Will, is if you were in my shoes, what would be the best way to respond to this? I could not save these bees, so I just prayed for these bees, and I just kind of had to go along with this spraying strategy to resolve the situation, or it would have been impossible to, you know, come in and out of the door. So what do you think about this dilemma?
I'm not afraid of bees, so I would have just gone in and out, and I wouldn't have said anything to anybody because, you know, I'm just not afraid of bees. I don't get stung. I have them crawl all over me sometimes, and typically they're busy doing their own thing, and they're not going to bother us. They're not anything to be afraid of, I don't think. I mean, if they're bees. I mean, so, I think it's, you know, a tragedy that they had to be killed. It's hard to say what I would have done. I never like to do what if, because I'm not in the situation, but I guess, you know, if something like that happened where I live, I would try to protect them if possible. I understand there's many, you know, there's all kinds of factors involved, and you know, people have their investments and their money and their, you know, all that's more important than animals always. But I think, you know, if we can somehow be a voice for the animals, it's always a good idea. You know, just say, well, I, you know, don't spray them. I would say, no, I don't think you should spray them. I think, you know, I mean, we lived in harmony with these animals, really. I mean, if they're not, I don't think they're going to hurt us. That's what I think.
I tried to take a stand for having them relocated, but they said they would have to take off the whole wall in order to do that. And they said that if they did not spray, the bees would make their way into the house.
Oh, I see. Well, maybe, you know. Yeah, I know there are these situations where we have our houses and they think it's their house, and sometimes we have to do things to try to do something else. But yeah, I understand. Like you say, you know, pray for them, send them your love, ask for forgiveness, and do something to maybe make a habitat for bees. Like, well, that's what we do. We just plant tons and tons of flowering bushes and try to really create a great habitat for bees, for all the different pollinators. And so we have more bees than anybody in the whole place because we have all these pollinators. So we love bees. I mean, we need them to pollinate all our fruit trees. And so do whatever we can to make a friendly place for animals, you know, I think they need help. You know, we're taking away their habitat completely. So whatever we can do, if they, you know, just try to do something to help on the other side, you know, try to make something maybe that, or raise awareness. I mean, thanks for bringing this up. It's good that you did. But we, in honor of our time, we have to stop here. But thanks, Angel. I really appreciate your input.
Well, thank you for commenting on that. And it really is a dilemma in situations like
right.
Being a vegan, being an animal rights activist, and yet not being able. And my last name, Honig, means honey. So I have
to Right.
But being in a position like this where basically they said to me, if we don't do this, they're going to come into your house. We cannot not do this. And I just didn't know what to do except pray. And that's why I wanted to hear your point of view on it and all that we can do to promote, as you said, healthy habitats for bees. That we're very dependent on for pollinization. I'm totally for that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you. And thanks, everyone, so much for joining us this evening. We'd like to have our closing prayer, which is the famous prayer that we say is part of the Circle of Compassion. I do want to mention that we're hopefully going to see this video. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm not sure how good it is, but I'm interested in seeing it. It's called Climate, the Movie, The Cold Truth. So you can look it up. It's on YouTube. It just came out, I think, like in the last day or two, supposedly. And one day ago, it just came out. It says, this film exposes the climate alarm as an invented scare without any basis in science. It shows that mainstream studies and official data do not support the claim that we are witnessing an increase in extreme weather events and so forth. So anyway, if you're interested, that's just came up on YouTube. It's probably going to be taken down very quickly. So if you want to see it, be good to see it. You can find it. That's the title, The Cold Truth. All right, so let's say our prayer together. Here we are. Please unmute your microphones there, and we can join together. Thank you. Here we go. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Yay! One more time with gusto. Here we go. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. All right, we love you. We'll see you on the first Thursday of April. Good night. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Yeah. Good night. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Good to see you, Dima.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Yeah.